This presentation was recorded at DevOps Days 2010 in Mountain View, California. This audio file and others like it are available for free download on InfoQ.com.
This panel is probably one of the most fluffy, as it is for me, DevOps outside web operations, so I brought a little help from these people. Let's start introducing yourself and we can continue.
I'm James Turnbull. I'm from currently Director of Operations at Puppet Labs. And prior to that, I've spent the last 20 years as an operations and security guy in banking and finance and gaming and casinos and telco and a whole bunch of large organizations. I've just moved to Portland a couple of weeks ago. And, USA. I'm not sure how to do that yet. I'm getting used to working in a 20-person company coming from a 40,000-person company.
Hello, my name is Michael Stonkey. I didn't put my company up there because they don't like me to print where I work. I don't know why. I work at Caterpillar, so I'll just come out and say it. I also am a founding member of the Apple project, so if any of you guys use Apple off of like CentOS or RHEL, I'm a big part of that. If you have complaints about it, come tell me. I'd love to hear it and talk about it. I've worked in two different parts of Caterpillar. The first one, we had 4,000 IT employees, and that was mostly infrastructure. And then where I work now, we have about 150 people in the entire IT department. It's a smaller division of Caterpillar.
I'm Adam Fletcher. I'm the operations architect at ITA Software. It's a company you all use every day and don't know it. We are in the airline industry, and we are building the new airline reservation systems, the stuff you'll be using now and in a few years. So we have serious uptime requirements and transactional requirements and things like that, which is why I wanted to talk about this.
Right on. My name is Gene Kim. I wrote the original version of Tripwire back in 1992. that's a long time ago. So I'm the CTO and founder of Tripwire. And I spent the last 10 years kind of studying a group of organizations that we used to call geniuses of people with good kung fu, right? And now we captured and codified how they made their good to great transformation, and that's when it went into a book called The Visible Ops Handbook. Anyone here have read it?
It's a great book. You should all read it.
Awesome. So, my background is really, I started off in QA, development, information security, but my real love is IT operations. Great to be here. Oh, and by the way, I'm a very late entrant to the DevOps community, but I freaking love it. I mean, I feel like from a value perspective, this is a tribe I want to be around. So thank you very much.
Okay. We have John arriving.
So I was in the bathroom and I just found out.
No problem.
I was just in the bathroom.
You're just in time,
I just found out I'm on this session, or this panel. So I'm not an expert at all, but I did sleep in a Holiday Inn Express last night. Yeah.
All right, before we kick off, a few questions for the audience. So who is into web operations? Okay, who works for enterprise companies? That's a few. Who doesn't do web operations? Okay. So I'm wondering, why is it that maybe there's not that much people from non-web operations companies? There are a few from the enterprises, but what will it work? So what are your experiences on that? Will it work outside web operations, DevOps?
So I think a lot of you are here from WebOps companies because speed to market is a serious issue for you guys. Banks' idea of speed to market is like 3 to 6 months, which is why they keep going under in a massive way. Don't buy bank shares, bad. But you guys have this whole continuous deployment model, the need to actually say, well, our competitor has a feature now. We need to have a feature in the next couple of hours. We need to be able to deploy within minutes. We need to be able to handle scaling issues. Banks and large finance institutions have, I do this all the time. And I ask WebOps people what their value transaction is. If your primary line of business to your customers is down, how much do you lose a minute? And they say, 10,000, 100,000, 500,000, a million. And I go, well, if you're a bank or a stock exchange, if your primary business ceases to exist or several of your service channels cease to exist, you not only potentially lose billions of dollars an hour, but you potentially get the regulator walking in the door and saying, I'm going to shut you down. As a result, they're massively conservative, risk-averse organizations. My concept of risk-averse, and I have to keep resetting my expectation now I've come to a smaller organization, is... I have a really high barrier to entry for change, and I'm one of those people that says, have you passed your CAB? Have you security reviewed it? Have operations reviewed it? Have you got QA results? Have you got testing results? And as a result, concepts like DevOps, I think, don't foster or don't grow quickly in industries like that. There's a high resistance to change and a high resistance to doing things differently or doing things in a slight, what was perceived as a riskier way.
So I guess the original question was, does DevOps work outside of WebOps? And the way that we've kind of approached it where I work is we didn't call it DevOps. We really didn't try and say there's this new thing that we're going to do. It was just starting to introduce change gradually over time to make the sysadmin team way more productive than they were currently were. In the area that I'm at now, I got there in 2007, and we had downtime every day on critical applications that were, you know, losing millions of dollars an hour. And, you know, finally we work on it, we get it all solved, and eventually somebody came up to me and they said, are we running a scrum in infrastructure? And I said, well, sort of. And they said, well, is it Kanban? And I was like, well, sort of, you know. And eventually I was like, there's this thing called DevOps. Go read about it if you're really interested in it. So I just kind of snuck it in there because it was a culture thing, and that's, you know, kind of what the theme of the morning was it's a culture problem, and I knew I couldn't change the culture of a 3,500 IT person organization. So trying to get them to all think about one problem at once is impossible, and most people are more concerned about their silo and making sure that their silo costs less than the next silo over. So, you know, we just had to change the culture, but it does work, and just don't call it a culture change and don't give it a new term and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, Michael. DevOps works outside of WebOps. It works where we are. We're young. We're learning about it, but we just do it. And you know, we do it by continuous automation and continuous deployment. That's sort of the easy place. We also have groups where, in terms of risk aversion, you know, we can't go down. If we go down, planes don't fly. That's pretty bad. If that's what you do for a living, is fly planes. And so we have teams that are developers and operations working together to just make sure the system can stay up all the time and measuring that and building metrics around it. And in deployment, for us, we have the same release schedules with banks, you know, 3 to 6 months, maybe more. And what we've done there is just we say, well, let's just do deployments all the time to our environments, because then when we do the real deployment, we've done it before. And it's easy to do. So our DevOps evolved out of a need for risk management and the things that you seem like you can't do it in, but you actually, it's the best place for it.
Yeah, I'm absolutely convinced. Moral certainty, what's above moral certainty? Absolute certainty, right? That the DevOps concepts apply not only to WebOps, but anything involving where you have a production flow that goes from development into production. And I think any organization, or especially an IT organization where you have multiple application groups funneling all the work funnels into one IT operations group, where IT operations become the bottleneck, that's where you need it the most, right? And so I think there's a certain symptomology that I've seen that, you know, I think is just a killer, right? Which is that, you know, application development deploys code into production, you know, after cutting a bunch of corners, right? And which then blows up and causes chaos and disruption into the IT operations environment, right? Which means that all the features that the business was promising doesn't quite work, which means that they miss their Wall Street, you know, commitments, right? And so they make even more audacious promises to Wall Street, right? Promising even more features, right? Which means even more corners need to get cut, right? Which means even more fragile code goes into production. And that the people who sort of take this in the shorts, right, are IT operations, right? And I think any place where you have that, by the way, how many people hear that symptomology sounds familiar? Yeah, right. So, I mean, I think any place where you have that kind of sort of downward spiral where technical debt accrues in IT operations, right, that's where you need it. So, and I've seen this work not only in the WebOps side, but also any place where operations is a bottleneck.
I disagree with all these gentlemen. DevOps sucks. Not really. No, I'm actually kind of a curmudgeon, right? So my career, 30 years in IT infrastructure, I like to call myself an ops guy, right? And so half my career was mainframe, that assembler stuff Luke talked about. And the second kind of quarter was doing is Tivoli. So if you feel bad for me, I did Tivoli for like 10 years, okay, if you know what that is. So
the oldest looking 30-year-old I've ever met.
Hey, I love this guy. Can I hug you? So the thing is, like, so something Theo said, like, earlier about, you know, like in some places that he goes to, right, like, if a consultant's, my last company was, by the way, I work for OpsCode, but the last company that I owned, I had, like, 30 consultants, and we had some, we had places like that where if the guy made a mistake, I mean, he didn't come back. I mean, I'll validate that. And I did a consulting contract once at the Federal Reserve, right, and my first instruction was, you know, and it was actually my old day, assembly day, so I was actually changing some stuff that actually really could have screwed things up, right? And the thing I was told, right, you know, the guy who hired me said, John, you know, I know you're a hot shot and all, I just want to warn you, if you bring a system down, it makes the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Now, this is pre-Twitter. This is long before, and that was, you know, again, this is like 15, 18 years ago, right? That now it happens every day for people. But, you know, that's the thing we have to kind of balance, right? There, you know, there are organizations like that where it's very difficult. I am definitely pro DevOps. I mean, if you follow my blog, some of you do. Patrick knows me. But, I mean, again, there is this balance that we need to be real careful of, right? And there are some companies that just can't change overnight, right? And later I'll tell you about the B of A story, but I'll wait till the next question.
Is this microphone even useful?
Yeah, it is.
It is, okay.
We have no feedback up here, so. So I was going to ask a quick question out here for the audience. Like, so how many people have a giant IT budget, like more than $100 million?
Okay. Few?
Okay. I don't know.
Turn the camera. Turn the camera.
Yes. So we spend more than $100 million with one vendor. So, I mean, it's just like when you talk about speed and velocity and getting things deployed, it's just not there when your data center is so giant and your commercial software spectrum is so giant. And it's just a different paradigm, I guess. And that's kind of where I wanted to start from is when you're in big enterprise, like WebOps is awesome when technology is what you do. My goal is to get yellow machines to people that want to play in the dirt all day. So I need to do that the most efficient way possible. So it's a little different, I guess.
Yeah, actually, one of the most interesting things I've ever heard, right, is, like, IT's not that important to us, right? We're not Google, right? But it turns out, like, every company has this huge dependency on IT, right? I was talking to the head auditor at the largest cement making company, right? It's like, we crush rocks, right? And we're like the opposite of Google. Yet they can't even, the number of products on their catalog is like 5,000, right, per country, right? Just depending on what state you are in. And so they can't even figure out what rocks to crush, where to ship it, right? And it turns out that, you know, and if you turn it off, right, you can't even conduct daily operations, right? So, like, at what point, right, you know, can the executive say, you know, IT is not a core competency, right? It's like if you turn it off and nothing can get done. I mean, I just find that fascinating, right? So
I pose that argument often and still lose.
No, I agree, and it's something you see a trend towards outsourcing and things like that. That IT isn't seen as a value transaction. It's seen as a commodity you can buy off the shelf. And in some cases, there are probably some things you can commodify. You can buy, you know, a box product off the shelf, but it doesn't do anything, and it doesn't do anything intelligently. And I hate software. It's what I belong to the Luke Kinney School of IT development. Software sucks most of the time, and it takes smart people to operate it. And if you're not providing those smart people and they're not doing things quickly and efficiently, then organizations look at them and go, we should outsource them. We should send them to India or to China because we can then settle the bottom line and we can get a service that'll be static and stable. You're like, and that's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. And you have to actually innovate and change, and that's something enterprises are going to learn. People in big organizations would employ 5, 10,000, 20,000 people in IT. If you don't make things fast, if you don't deliver product to market sooner, if you don't respond to the business quicker, you will get sacked, and they will outsource your job to India or China or somewhere else, and it will not be a good outcome for you or the organization.
Thanks, gentlemen, here. It makes a lot of sense.
Okay, Israel, you want?
Reflect on the very good point of how do you engage your executives in a $100 million budget or larger. My sense is that executives are afraid to engage because they don't know what it means. So at the point in time in which you can get them out of this anxiety, I don't understand their slang, I don't know what they are doing, how would I measure it, etc., 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 you start bringing them in. And the thing that I do on an ongoing basis as a before and after chart, namely I ask the person to list his or her set of responsibilities at this point in time, and I work with him or her on what would the responsibilities be like after we had a successful agile engagement or after we had a successful DevOps engagement. The beauty of it, even if I have to say so, it applies equally well to mid-level managers. So it's not just the executive level that you see, oh my gosh, what would I do? It's actually even more so at the mid-level managers once you crystallize to them the before versus the after, usually it's relatively straightforward to get their engagement.
Yeah. So the thing is, the word cloud is a shitty term. I mean, that's the bottom line, right? NoSQL was a shitty term, right? And DevOps is a shitty term.
It is.
Right? But they're great terms, right? Because, like, 2 years ago, when somebody said cloud to a senior exec, right, he was like, what? Get out of my office, right? Or he's looking at some network diagram, right? But what happened was the whole airline magazine thing took over, right? And the word cloud showed up, and he heard it from here and there and at parties. And then it was like, okay, we need to figure out what's our cloud strategy. And NoSQL was a horrible name, right? So they cheated. It was really NoSQL. It wasn't not only SQL, right? You know, and that wasn't the original name, right? But it was a great thing to show us that there are alternatives to relational databases. Right? Not everything has to be, you know, I think, what is it, Donald Knuth says, you know, premature optimization is the root of all evil, right? I mean, we don't have to, you know, now we can make decisions further back, right? And so DevOps is one of those terms. And I think what you're going to hear, and I think Lee Thompson said it, we did an ops camp, right? And he said, like, I guarantee you're going to hear this next year. You're going to hear at board level, what's our DevOps strategy? You're going to hear that stuff. And we laugh now, but I'm telling you, that's what, you would have laughed, well, not you, obviously. I know you wouldn't laugh, but that, I mean, people were laughing if somebody was saying, you know, I mean, James Urquhart's going to be here hopefully in a little while. You here, James? He's on a panel. He better be here. Oh, no. Okay. You know, I mean, you know, 3 years ago, we were blogging about cloud. You know, he you know, if he would have said something like that, and a lot of people were like, yeah, you're crazy. And I had enterprises 2.5 years ago look me in the face and go, we'll never do cloud. Absolutely not, you know. And then a year later, I'm at an Amazon boot camp, and half their employees are there, you know. So, you know, anyway.
So we don't have a $100 million software budget, and we ITA, are a very traditional software company, and we're not responsible for the airline magazines. And but our customers have that, and they're very serious about it. And one of the things we found in selling to our customers, for instance, which is convincing someone to spend $100 million, which is probably similar to what you have to do, Michael, is our metrics and our DevOps work shows up in the same documents. They show up in RFP answers and things like that. And that's really paid off. So, you know, being able to have thousands of metrics that prove you can run software at this transactional volume and it stays up all this time. And how do you know that? Well, look at our tests and look at our suites. It's, you know, they're smart people that are going to spend that $100 million and they want to see that data. And it's because we work with because we work with our developers to help generate that data, it helps us sell our product.
That's interesting. If you would, they would be asking for a DevOps strategy. What would be their metric of success then?
Well, there's a lot of companies saying right now, what's our cloud strategy? And they don't
know the
difference between Salesforce.com and Amazon.
Yeah.
But they're still asking that question, and that's the good news.
Yeah.
Right, because it's why we're all here. Because the good news is there's 250 to 300 people here wanting to figure out what the heck DevOps is all about.
Yeah.
And by the way, let me. One of the things I'm looking for, I've spent the last 2 years really fixating on the space that I guess you could call them DevOps-style transformations. And one of my concerns is that the activation energy is so high. You need so many things to sort of align in order to get the priorities so that it doesn't sound like a moral crusade, right? That you're trying to argue with the moralities of the head of of the head of development, right? And so. Really? Okay, well then, maybe these guys know how to do it, right? But yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I worked with the CTOs of 2 of the 5 largest internet companies, right? You know, think Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, AOL, right? I mean, and, you know, I would say I'm batting 50% success rate, right? Even with the sponsorship at the CTO level, right? In one case, we were able to reduce deployment times of code from 4 days to 30 minutes. Right. In the other case, you know, it was probably as bad as ever been, and it's getting worse. And so when I look at the mirror, right, I'm like, gosh, you know, at what point, you know, what does it really take to make, you know, DevOps style transformations more predictable, more successful, and do it in a way that you can actually people are willing to bet their careers on it? Because I think it's actually a very dangerous, vulnerable position that you put people in when you embark on this project.
All right.
Yeah, maybe a quick answer. And
yeah,
then
I just want to get a quick rebuttal to that is, you know, you're saying that you're working at the CTO level, CIO level on DevOps or whatever it is. I just started at the ground up. I was like, my team sucks. How do I fix it? I mean, we're having problems, and I need to, we're approaching the problem with the wrong mindset, and that was really what the problem was. It was like, if everything's a fire, then all I have is a water hose. Yeah. But what I need is a plan to not have fires. So
trust me, I understand that part. I think the whole part of visible ops is control unplanned work, right? Yeah. You know, an unplanned work isn't free. Unplanned work comes at the expense of planned work, right? And at a certain point, right, you need to muster up and backburner a whole bunch of projects to get these infrastructure improvement projects done, right? Improve the pre-production runways, increase flow into production, get right monitoring in place, right? And if you don't have the luxury of starting over, you know, that takes time, money. You're going to have to crowd out a bunch of other projects that the business needs. You know, that's not a one person can do it in their spare time. You know, you need to mobilize the entire organization. So, you know, at least I haven't figured out a way for one person to be able to do that. A DBA can't push that project.
I think one of the things, that, and this is, I come from a security background, and I quite frequently had security analysts come to see and say, I've tried to sell this to management, we've got a vulnerability, and it could do this, this, and this. And they presented a technical thing, something that has gibberish, gibberish, gibberish. And that's what the executive sees. They say gibberish, gibberish, SQL injection, gibberish, gibberish, gibberish. And they go, what's the business impact? And that's how you sell DevOps, is you say, the business impact of this technical vulnerability, and you don't even tell them what that you say. It's a hole in our website. We could cost us $1 million if someone was to subvert this and steal this money or defraud our customers. And you say, by fixing this, we save ourselves a potential exposure of $1 million. And by DevOps is the same thing. We say, if we could deploy our software or increase add a 9 to our availability, or we could limit the number of times we had customers complaining about latency, then this would save $100,000 an hour, or this would save the organization, you know, X dollars of this or X time of that.
I think it was also at Velocity relating the business with your operations that gets people involved. But let's get back.
So we're talking about a lot of myths. So premature optimization is the root of all evil. True. NP hard. Figuring out that it's premature. So you don't know when the optimization is premature. So how do you fix that? Do it all the time. You know, is this something that you can do better? You should. Prioritize doing it better and just say, look, we know that this can be optimized in this way. Put it up on the board. This goes back to Israel's earlier question. How do you know when, or was it Israel? I don't remember. How do you know when to change? Whenever you are changing, how do you know when to reevaluate? All the time, right? If you are not constantly questioning the assumptions that got you to where you are, then you are not doing your job. And the other myth that I want to call out is this notion of IT as commodity. Now, just as with premature optimization being the root of all evil, true, but not the interesting part, IT is a commodity, but people are not. And this is not specific to IT. Right? I think if you look at management, there's 1%. And if you look at technology, there's 1%, or marketing, or sales, right? There are these people who are just ridiculously good at what they do. And the things that they can accomplish are incomprehensible to 99% of the people as things that you could actually get done. And so the people in leadership positions who say, this is a commodity, we can outsource this, et cetera, they're not in that 1%. And the people who say, you know, engineering's a commodity, design's the really hard part now. Same people, right? It's always hard to find great people. It doesn't matter what market you're in. And so this is no different. If you are talking to someone who's at the top of the organization and you can't drive change in the organization, they are not doing their job, period.
Yeah. That's one.
I think, Ben, everybody in this room agrees with you. I don't think we'd be here if we thought operations was a commodity. I've heard people talk about DevOps being the anti-pattern of what we do. But, I mean, I can't believe most people in this room, do you think operations is a commodity? I think we should outsource operations.
It's all about rounded buttons. That's right? Our problem.
I mean, yeah. And just to the point of the optimization question, that was actually in reference, not really to DevOps, to the ability. Ben, are you listening? You asked the question. To how you would choose your database, or make choices premature about the allocation of the resource. So in the past, most people had to decide to go down a relational database pattern because they didn't have a choice. Now with things like NoSQL, they do have an ability to step back, design the purpose, and not think in terms of already designing tables and infrastructure. So anyway.
So they always had a choice.
I disagree with that.
I know you disagree, but what I'm saying is they did always have a choice. No, there's a reason that people keep saying there's nothing new in this NoSQL stuff, right? And it's because, by and large, there isn't. And so I don't know if people remember Juno, the early on big free email system, but huge proportions of Juno were actually BDB. That is actually completely orthogonal to the question of whether or not most of this stuff was available for people to use, whether or not they would use it, or whether or not it was a specific form of thing, like now it's Hadoop and it's HDFS and all that sort of stuff.
Can you use the mic, please?
I'm sorry. Never mind. Where are you?
But my point is simply that they always had a choice. They just didn't choose to go down it.
So I think Ben brings up a great point. And I think everyone in this room should have a lot of confidence that there's a ton of business value, you know, in doing things the DevOps way, right? Kurt Milne from the IT Process Institute, an organization I helped co-found after we wrote Visible Ops, I mean, we benchmarked over 1,500 IT organizations trying to link controls to performance. We found that the high-performing IT organizations were 4 to 5 times more productive, right, than your non-high-performing IT organizations, right? They were delivering more projects, they were more secure, they were more compliant, right? They had better operational measures, and, you know, there were three things that led to those performance things. So, like, three things would predict performance measures. You know, to what extent does an organization have some sort of defined, monitored, and enforced configuration strategy? Right? To what extent is there a process culture that's defined, monitored, and enforced? The third one is, to what extent, oh, by the way, this is there's an irony here. To what extent do you restrict access to production, especially for DBAs and developers? Right? And you're not supposed to do that. But anyway, those things typically predict performance, right? And so I think, you know, leaders will understand that, and yet I still feel like there's a very high activation energy and still a not ideal success rate, you know, for making these transformation efforts succeed.
Go on to the next one. Yeah.
Actually, you perfectly segued to where I wanted to go, which is that I know for a lot of people, DevOps seems to be all about bridging web development with web operations. But I've actually seen it as an interesting cross-pollinization between enterprise operations and web operations and sharing back and forth. So obviously, there's a lot of people in enterprise who are now like trying to figure out how they're going to integrate, like, you know, Hudson for continuous integration, and like, why the hell would I want to do this? But the interesting thing that's flowing back is there's this like almost like a second wave of adoption of standards. Like ITIL's new to a lot of the startups who have kind of got, they're starting to mature, right? And they're actually finding things like ITIL and ISO 27000 and ISO 20000 and all these kind of standards that enterprise over the last 10 years has gotten sick of and hates. And they're now adopting it as like, oh, wow, there's actually terminology for this. There are people who have figured this out. And visual ops is really kind of coming to a new crowd. So I don't know, are you guys seeing some of that, or am I completely off base?
We see some of that, certainly. We're a traditional software company, but we see some of that. We definitely see the push for standards from customers and people like that. My last job was a big Six Sigma web service provider, and they love the standards in the Six Sigma. And I think one thing you get out of DevOps is those ideas of control and those ideas of standards compliance come from the core philosophy rather than from written manuals or books. I mean, the last company, we couldn't afford to buy the ITIL books. I mean, like, so you know what? My philosophy was, oh, screw ITIL, I care. I'm just going to control and measure. Like, I can do that. And we did that. And I think, but I do think you see a lot of that philosophy. But in DevOps, to me, it's about controlling and measuring because there's value, not because you got told to.
Though I agree completely with that, and I think the important thing is that you can use stuff like ISO 9000 and 27000 and ITIL if that's the language of your organization. Couch DevOps in those terms, because there's nothing in DevOps that contradicts that stuff in there, because it's all basically common sense. Yeah. You know, and if you use that language to sell it in your organization, go for it.
And I guess I have one caveat, and I think you're alluding to this, is that often these ITIL initiatives have sort of the stench of failure around them, right? You know, they've been at it for 3 to 5 years, and they have not impacted how daily operations is run, right? They're the people that you sort of run away from in the hallway because they have all these kind of crazy bureaucratic ideas. Yeah.
It's funny to see the trends. I was talking to a guy who had a wood shop, and I was talking about Kanban in development, and he said, Kanban, we did like 5 years ago. It didn't work.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It's like, every industry gets a little later, and then it's, whoa, something new, some new ideas. And then I find, okay, it's not too easy to do them. So it's
I think, boy, the DevOps movement can really invigorate the ITIL movement, which I have a love-hate relationship with.
The interesting thing there was it seemed ITIL got a lot of cynicism in the enterprise space because it was being injected into environments that already had a huge amount of process, and they went, now we're going to modify our process to match ITIL. And it was like two planets colliding, right? Whereas ITIL seems to be very interesting to startups and web op kind of companies where they have nothing. They've just sort of done what seemed right because they were so busy with product development. As they mature, they've got nothing. So they now kind of have a basis to grow from rather than just figuring it out as they go.
It's funny because you asked that. I was talking to John. Anybody who was at John Allspar's presentation yesterday, right? So it's funny. I was telling him that, you know, because I've been trying to get see if we can't get enterprise in the velocity, like in a big way, right? Get some of the people that are ITIL process. And I thought it wouldn't be funny. I was asking John if he thought it would be funny if like somebody from like Bank of America who does service management like to the core came in the middle of John's presentation and kind of interpreted it as they're just starting to talk about change management. They'd walk out and go, I knew those guys were a bunch of yahoos. Right, but then what would turn around if John walked into a presentation at I won't say B of A, but some company that's using something like Tivoli or sorry BMC, and they looked at what they're monitoring compared to what he does on his laptop to manage Etsy. Like I'm sitting next to him in one of his sessions, and he's like monitoring like everything that's going on in his laptop. There are very few Fortune 500 companies that are monitoring that way. And so if they walked in, you know, he walked into their presentation like, I knew it. Enterprise doesn't have a clue. Right, so the truth is we got to merge both those cultures. There's some great things about enterprise. I mean, there's companies like JP Morgan Chase have been doing change management for 20 freaking years. I mean, they got change teams that know everything about the four corners of that building or multiple buildings, right? So I think that's a great question. I think that but I think my answer is we need to figure out how to merge the great. Just keep looking at it like they're yahoos. Oh no, they're yahoos. They don't know what they're doing. So anyway,
okay. Let's go to the next question.
I think the one of the big issues with getting this kind of stuff into organizations really is the thought that it is premature optimization, right? We're going to change it next week, so why automate it? And why work with engineering to like really build teams together, right? And selling that to your C-level people is the goal. But on the flip side, like this is stuff that good sysadmins have been doing for years, right? If you're a good sysadmin, you've been doing this stuff for your entire career, right? And if you've had good mentors, they've been teaching you to do this stuff for your entire career. Because how do you like really make a stable environment? You automate the hell out of everything, right? When everything becomes a push button event because you've automated it that way, not because you bought some software that way, but because you automated it that way, that's where our goal is, right? That's what makes a good sysadmin a good sysadmin.
I totally agree. I came from a mainframe mid-range background originally, and my old ops manager who taught me about process and ISO and all that sort of shit, he'd look around this room and go, yeah, you guys are just getting this. And because that's how good mainframe shops ran, solid process, and they could guarantee things like 99.999 availability well before anyone in started looking around and going, well, this is kind of important. Because not only because it's big iron, but because process was solid.
Or
let's take the next question.
Hi, Mr. Kim. Thank you for writing the Visible Ops. It's likely the only ITIL related book I probably will read.
I have a joke for you, by the way. Like ITIL, is that European for fail? I love.
Just a quick data point, and so at. Maybe 2 years or a year and a half ago when I was at Flickr and we had been doing what people call continuous deployment, and there was a lot of development and operations cooperation that essentially enabled that to happen, along with a host of other things that we've been talking about here and at Velocity. I said yes to my boss, we do deploy 10 times a day. And yes, developers push their own code. And his boss's boss is Ari Balog, right, who wrote the foreword for Visible Ops, who was the CTO at Yahoo at the time. And if that guy, he was aware, and I had met Ari, and if he was aware that we were doing that, which may or may not, at reading through Visible Ops, you what? The reason why Flickr was allowed to continue to do that was because we had numbers to prove that it was okay. Just want to say a data point that your mileage may vary, and that, yes, I do believe, and now, even though I've left Yahoo, and so has Ari, the SVP of Ops, David Dibble, there, extremely smart guy, lots of other people in the Yahoo engineering and operations executive level do get it, and people are getting it. So, you know, just one data point. Yahoo at some point, extremely conservative, and I expected to be fired after I told that. But our numbers beat the shit out of Yahoo Sports and Mail and Front Page. So,
and I think we might have taken a draconian view on that. And I think in my journey, what I've learned is who was the woman who said we earned the right to be able to not go through the 15 hours of bureaucracy to push into production. Well, I mean, I think that's where you end up, right? Is like, for the group that has a 20% change success rate and blew up things that take 8 man weeks to recover, they don't deserve to push code into production, right? They've kind of lost that right. But those who are batting like 99.5%, I'm sorry. Oh, great. Thank you. So if you are batting 99.5% change success, right, then I think you have earned that right. And then I think it's the goal of management to sort of like be able to distinguish who gets the keys to the car, who is on the weekly payment plan, where it's like you just check up on them every day to make sure that they haven't set another car building on fire.
So, yeah, your mileage may vary, but you better have metrics. I mean, really, you talk about being able to prove that you haven't caused any outages. You better be able to prove it. And if you're not tracking that stuff, then you have no business case and you have no justification to ask for the rights to do anything. You just don't. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, next question.
I would like to share an experience from the Agile movement, which I think applies pretty much as is to DevOps, and particularly to the discussion around ITIL. For years, we have been fighting tooth and nail whether Scrum is better than XP or DMDS, and now Kanban, and it absolutely led us nowhere. All of those methods have their own place and virtues. It's only at the point in time that we were able to look and measure at the proficiency of the Agile method that we started making progress. We were able to assess whether the organization is really adopting it the right way and getting the right output and outcomes, or whether it's a theological discussion about one way of doing things versus another. The reason that I bring it up, I have done a lot of ITIL work in my life, but I could not care less in terms of my philosophy whether you do ITIL or do any other thing that works for you. The critical thing is not the method you adopt. The critical thing is whether you can assess whether you are becoming better and better at it. If you have this ability to measure your proficiency, you will do well with just about any method. Whether you want to start with ITIL or does not start with ITIL is a consideration, but this is not the heart of the matter in terms of DevOps.
I think ITIL, the latest version, it's all about continuous improvement, and you see that in the new versions. But, yeah, I guess it's getting there. But
bigger.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So ITIL comes from engineering and not computer developer engineering, but engineering to build bridges and all of that sort of shit. It's lesson learned from that, and those people understand that measurements mean something. You know, if your bridge falls down and 100 people die, you have failed to measure the problem and you have failed to understand. You know, and engineers get that because it's been happening since the Roman period.
Okay, I think we.
I find myself emotionally sort of a little frustrated, right? I feel like if everyone in this room believes that we're so good, right, that we can be batting, 90% success rates in terms of making DevOps happen in our organization, I don't think we're being intellectually honest. You guys are so much better at it than me that I've wasted the last 2 years. And I think, what I'm really interested in is sort of, I love lean, I love ITIL, I love controls, I love tone at the top, but I mean, what are the daily methods you need to use, right, to actually improve operations and the flow of planned work into production? I mean, that's if anyone has some tips and want to share stories on that, I mean, I think that's kind of the body of knowledge we need to gather, because I think it's harder than, I mean, how many people here think it's just really hard to make a big organization change? Right. And so, yeah. So I think we're kind of overplaying or underplaying kind of the ease of making transformations happen.
Just two quick things. We have to wrap up. We're almost finished.
Just a quick thought. We're here as web people and working on the internet and that sort of thing. But outside of our industry, the large companies, the large corporations that exist don't exist without IT and in a lot of cases e-commerce anyway. So Walmart isn't just a big retailer. They're a gigantic IT and data mining shop. UPS is digital logistics. Cemex is a huge cement company in Mexico. Everything's online. So if we're here and we can put together a coherent vocabulary, they'll follow us. They will boldly go where we're going to go. But we have to, you know, put together and not say IT is different from the web, is different from whatever, regardless of whether you pick ITIL or whatever it is. But they'll follow us eventually.
I guess I agree with that for the most part, but there's a lot of cases where they're not the ones following, they're actually the ones leading. They just work behind large closed doors that don't allow them to share very well.
Okay. All right, we have to wrap up.
So if you've had a conversation with me recently, you've probably heard me say this already, but everything begins as a movement, becomes a business, and ends up as a racket. And we have, you shouldn't be worried about whether you're doing DevOps or not. You should be worried about whether you're getting better. You have to take stock of where you're at, start measuring stuff. Get better. Don't worry about doing DevOps. Worry about creating value and being awesome.
Okay. I think he just told the closing.